Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. So this channel is quite close to my heart because I train coaches in embodiment. I mean, why? Because if you don't work with the body, you're missing a lot. Whether you're a coach, a therapist, facilitator, whatever, that's how you go deep quickly. That's how you do stuff that's sticky. We have to take the body into account. This channel is sponsored by Dylan Newcombe and Uzazu Embodied Intelligence. Dylan is a genius, quite simply put, and I wouldn't say that about many people in this field. I've been studying with Dylan for, God, the first time was probably 10 years ago in the Netherlands. Speaks fluent Dutch, by the way, as well as Korean and a few other languages. What I love about Dylan is his ability to make models of things, looking at how embodiment works. His system, Uzazu, U-Z-A-Z-U, is really all about state shifting. So I think of him as the sort of master of state changing, how we can shift our state, our client's state, and how we can develop ourselves through those different ways of being. So I think for coaches and therapists, it's like easy to learn, practical toolkit. I've used it myself over the years. So if you want a 3-day online training with Dylan, then look at the link below, or you can go to Uzazu, uzazu.org. And even easier, he's got an embodied assessment there you can do as well. We all love doing these little tests about ourselves, but this is an embodied one. So there you go. Welcome to the Coaching and Therapy channel. I'm going to be on this one a lot just because there's lots of cool people on here. Lots of people, I think, you know, well worth a listen. Embodiment in facilitation is so necessary. So from me to you, welcome.
Hi, I'm Charlie Badenhoff, and I'm a longtime friend and colleague of Judith Deloja. And we're here, we believe we're going to give you an interesting class today. And in the course of us doing NLP and learning about NLP, Judith and I and a number of other people have come to the belief that prior to being able to talk, as I'm talking right now, something happens in the body, and that the body actually has a language all of its own. And Judy's talking about today about somatic syntax, and syntax is kind of, you could say, the rules or even grammar that the body follows faithfully in order to be able to communicate with you. And of course, you might have figured out already that the body doesn't speak English or French or Italian, or I'm in Thailand right now, the body doesn't speak Thai, but that as mammals, we all have a way of understanding this somatic language that we're all talking. So Judy is going to start exploring that topic with you now. I'm just giving us, hopefully, a little introduction that helps to get us started, that we're going to pay attention and start talking about this idea of how the body communicates to us.
Thanks, yeah, Charlie. Judy? Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. On to you then, Judy.
All right. Thank you. First of all, thank you for the opportunity to be here at all. And thank you, Charlie and Matthew, for kind of holding the space to make sure that I could show up and having this beautiful invitation. So I'm going to talk about, as Charlie said, somatic syntax, and I'll talk a little bit about the history of that from my perspective and where it all goes and where it's all going. And I come from the NLP background, and I became involved in NLP actually before it had a name. I can remember the night that John Grinder and Richard Bandler sat up drinking red wine all night long to come up with an appropriate name, which turned out to be neuro-linguistic programming, or NLP. The relationship between language, which is a surface structure, and a deep structure called my experience inside, and that deep structure lives below the neck, and that's where the soma is. So in this third generation, we say of NLP, we talk about a cognitive mind, which starts here. You know, usually people talk about when you're thinking, where is it? Somewhere behind the eyes in this huge empty space, and appears somewhere. And now we talk about the somatic mind, or the mind that lives in the body. Before we talked about that, In NLP, we talked about three different representational systems. The visual system, that I see things and I create images on the inside of my mind. I have images that I can remember and I have images that I can create. We talked about the auditory channel, the ability that I have to have a great conversation with myself sometimes and sometimes not so great. And then also the tones of life that I hear in the world. We talked about smell and taste. And then we talked about this thing called the kinesthetic representational system, I represent in my body sensations, feelings, so on and so forth. But I was never satisfied with how it was talked about because it was very minimized from my perspective. So there was a lot of distinctions made in visualization and all kinds of ideas about that and all kinds of research about that at the time. There was also a lot of distinctions that we could make auditorily and sounds of voices, so on and so forth, and pitch and volume and where it is and all this. But when it came to the kinesthetic system as a system, the somatic world, it was almost as if it was just sort of this vessel that held emotion and that was kind of it. And I just kept thinking, no, it's more than that. It is a representational system. It has the ability to learn. It has the ability to code and decode information. It has the ability to remember. So we really aren't treating it, from my perspective, as a fully developed representational system. And it is the part of the living system of a human being which deals with the patterns that connect. It deals with the relationships of the parts that are living inside of me. So to bring my awareness from sort of the reasons to the reasons of the heart is what I would say, and the belly, you know, to bring my awareness to the, as Charlie would say, the other conversation. And I remember that Charlie was the first person I remember saying, well, you know, there's these thoughts we have, and then there's this whole other conversation going on, which is the kinesthetic or the nonverbal somatic conversation. So the soma just means body, syntax means what is the ordering, kind of what is the ordering of when I'm in a particular overall state of being as a human being. If I were to talk to you, for example, if I were to ask Charlie to tell me, just say a few words, what it's like when he feels very centered, because I know he's an Aikido master. So when he is very centered, what kind of movements would his body naturally make? Not think about, but just as he was conversing, go, well, you know, Judy, when I'm in that beautiful state of being, when I'm settled down and really connected into my core, really connected to the earth, really have that spaciousness in my, you know, in my heart and in my mind, and I'm connected out to you, he will naturally make certain movements. And those movements will be a kind of syntax, just like we have syntax in language, will be a kind of syntax that we can become sensitive to. Once we can capture that syntax, let's suppose it's something like this or something like this, that just comes in the natural conversation. What happens is I would ask somebody to bring awareness to that. Just bring all your awareness to the movement and now play with it. Play with the movement. What happens to that state of being when you make it very slowly? Does it enhance the state? Does it make more of it? Does it make less of it? What is the particular syntax and order that has to be there to support that state of being? Can I stabilize it? Can I make more of it? Can I destabilize it? Can I make less of it? So that when I want to take a state of being and make it fuller, I can do that exactly just with my movements. If I want to take a state of being which is not so useful for me, it's just not, you know, a state that I like to find myself in, I can find the syntax for that and destabilize it. Go, what is the particular pieces that have to be a part of my somatic syntax that support that state of being. And if I take that one and do it real fast, for example, or do it real slow, for example, or do it on one foot, for example, does it begin to destabilize that state? Can I find the edge of something in a state of being before it becomes something new? You know, when does exciting become funny, for example? So can I find an edge and go, can I go over even that edge to a place that's open? If I'm problem solving, for example, can I go past that problem state just using my somatic syntax to sort of destabilize it enough to find the edge? Where does it become something else? And before it becomes something else, there's an open space. And in that open space, and this is another beautiful part from my perspective about somatic syntax, that when I find that open space, my whole organism, and especially my somatic world, starts to offer me other choices there. So for example, now, if I were to ask Charlie, maybe Charlie will do this with me just for fun. So Charlie, if I were to ask you to think about a very positive state of being for you, what would that be?
Being what I would call fully present.
Being fully present. And have you been fully present before?
A few times.
Exactly. So that's not okay. Where is the place that you would like to be more fully present but are not?
I'd like to be more fully present when I'm dealing with situations or people that I don't have a lot of confidence in.
Okay. But to still be more to be fully present. So if I asked Charlie to just, if he could be fully present with me for a moment and maybe use his body to just show me a movement that kind of comes naturally when he's fully present. Do you have a movement like that? Since I can't really see you real well, I'll just ask you.
Well, I think you can see about chest level up, yeah?
Yeah.
So I get a feeling of this. And it continues to open.
Okay. So you get a feeling and the body expresses it as this, and it continues and it continues and it continues and continues into a full opening. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Let that go. Just let it go. So you know that's there. And then kind of connect to that place where you go, you're dealing with somebody and, you know, you're not really fully confident in them. You know, I know you as an extraordinarily present guy with a lot of skills, a lot more than I have. So when that comes, that sort of, I'm not so confident about that guy or that gal, sort of what, if you took that feeling and then just expressed it in this moment. I'm asking you to do this a little consciously, and in reality I might be a little bit more discerning about that, but is there a movement that kind of comes with that kind of naturally?
Well, I would basically say this. I might not be feeling it exactly that strong, but scrunching my face and tightening up.
Okay, so there's something that kind of holds on, you might say.
Yes.
Okay, great. Now, if I were going to do this with a client, for example, I may not mention the fact that I'm looking for particular, I mean, I wouldn't ask them to kind of generate it like I'm asking Charlie to do, but I would notice just what happens naturally when they're telling me about it, and I would capture one of those movements. So Charlie, you know what this is, right? You know what this is like, okay? And so you also know what this is like. Yeah, great. Now, if you go to this, what happens when you relax your fists a little, when they relax, what happens inside with that state of being?
I'm able to breathe a little better.
Able to breathe better. Okay, great. What happens if you just go back to make it come back again? See, this is where we learn to have control over, you know, certain things in a positive way. It's called emotional intelligence sometimes. So what happens if you just use one fist?
It immediately, I feel less intense.
You feel less intense. Okay. Okay. Go back again so I can do it again, right? What happens if you open your hands like this?
I'm beginning to open up the space for the both of us to have the conversation in.
Great. Great. So, I mean, that would be a kind of taste, a little bit of a taste of going, what happens in a problem state if I want to go back to the NLP tote model and go, there's a present state and there's a desired state and there's something that happens in between, some kind of magic between those two states. And I feel a sense of having a choice, right? So the interesting thing from a somatic point of view for me is, if I just were to take the problem space to start with and just settle in there and just really feel what I feel and hear what I hear and, you know, see what I see in there and just allow my body to express it. That's another way to think about it. Just take whatever there, just as long as it's coming out of that deeper system and just express it. Just let the body express it. And then leave it, take a step away from it. So you can kind of also see what you look like in a way when you're there, gives you some information. Go to what you want. If you have an idea of what you want instead of this, if I have some close approximation, sometimes it's hard to be 100% accurate, but I can get closer and closer to sort of approximations to perfection by just starting with, well, maybe just the opposite of that's a good start point for me, right? If I'm anxious, what would be the opposite of anxious? Well, I'd feel a sense of confidence and I'd feel settled, okay? And you get this kind of movement going like this. Well, you know, things would shift. So that can kind of grab that. So then I have two movements. Then what's really amazing is to go, can I start in one movement and begin to just allow my body, just bring all my awareness to my body, settle in that awareness, and notice how my body wants to connect the space. My body knows the relationship between where I am and what I want, where I want to go. It knows it already. What doesn't know it is this, because it understands the relationships of those parts. So if I turn that over to my somatic mind and I just allow my body to find its way between those two states of being and create the space for that to happen and bring my awareness into there and notice what emerges as my body is finding a way. What changes inside of me as my body is finding its way across that interesting little space. My mom used to say, there's no such thing as a problem. It's just this idea that you think you want to be somewhere else. And it's only the space between where you are and where you think you want to be. That's a problem. But my body understands the relationship in a way that if I create the space and I bring awareness to that, and as Charlie would say, I slow down, pause, and breathe and notice what's happening. What emerges is in that space in between is quite often just the resource I need to close that gap. Sometimes a person will can't say, I can't name it. They go, something shifted. I can feel something has shifted inside because when I go back to that problem, it doesn't have the same power, doesn't have the same sense about it, doesn't have this exactly the same feeling. Something is shifting inside because this you know, unit of mind is conservative. It's basically conservative, that once it's really invested time and energy into a certain groove in the record, it takes some effort sometimes to shift that. But I think we can do it faster and faster.
Okay, Judy.
Yeah.
So just hearing a small piece that intrigues me is you said, I'll say what I heard and then you'll add to it or correct it or whatever, is that my body in any given moment knows what my cognitive mind doesn't yet know.
I believe that. I believe that. It may not know relata, data, but it understands the relationships. That's what it does. It's holding all the relationships.
So that rather than continuing to try to, like, I call it outthink myself.
Oh, you mean analysis paralysis?
Yes, analysis paralysis.
Right.
I find a way to pay more attention to my body. And as I'm paying greater attention to my body, solutions or potential changes start to show up. Is that it?
Yeah, I think that's exactly it. And all I did was say, here's a pathway from NLP called present state, desired state. What's the magic that happens in between? And I can talk about it. I can say, here's my problem, and this is what's happening, and this is how I feel about it, and all these things. And even in that process, I'm going to have this, there's this other conversation going on. What I'm doing is focused on that other conversation, because my guess is if it's a problem, they've had the conversation many, many times.
Yeah, so we're making a conscious choice to bump ourselves a little bit and say, okay, you've been paying a lot of attention, maybe almost all of your attention to what you've been thinking. What's the other conversation that's simultaneously going on? Let's start paying more attention to that, correct?
Yeah, it's another way of thinking. So I want to make sure that if I'm going to talk about thinking, that I'm thinking both with my body and I'm also thinking with my cognition. And what that means is that I'm creating better and better pathways between the reasons of the reasons and the reasons of the heart and the reasons of the belly and the intuitional place, as Aldous Huxley would say, that our fall from grace as human beings, one of the reasons we got kicked out of the Garden of Eden in a way was because we became able to be self-conscious. And when we become self-conscious, most of us go there and kind of criticize ourselves or tell ourselves we're, you know, we make mistakes or we're bad or this or that or another thing, as opposed to some kind of a correction to come back home and really come back home and connect in with the somatic world and get present again to life, because that's where life is happening out here. And the only way it happens is through this organism. The only real memory we have is the memory that lives in the body. It's the memory that's stamped in every cell of the human species, right? It's our history.
Yes. Yeah, so I think I often say that my way of thinking about it is that we hold our memories in our body, in our musculature, in our muscle tone, in the allowing or constricting neural flow, so that when I do this, whether I immediately can say, oh, that's the time I had that car accident or something, my body is remembering it. And it's, you know, as we say, a picture is worth 1,000 words. The body's communication, I think, happens instantaneously. And then we start deciphering it and making sense out of it.
Yeah, I think that's the conversation that's going on. And if we talked about Gregory Bateson, Gregory Bateson would say that's 92% of the conversation, or 75% of the conversation is the somatic. And then there's the tonal, right? Tone, tempo, yes. The sounds of life. But It's only about 8% that's the cognition and the words, really.
Yes.
The word.
Yes.
Yeah. That's why we speak human, you know. That's why you can go so many places in the world. You have this amazing instrument, and it's called your body, and everybody you're talking to has the same hard drive, basically. They get born with the same hard drive, you know, with the nose south of the eyes, the mouth south of the nose, and there are certain assumptions that we can make, you know, based on that form. We're members, we have the same form, and we have a lot, many thousands of years development somatically than a few thousand years of cognition as we know it. You're such an animal. I mean, we're just such animals, right?
You know, when I used to live in Japan, and I'd be walking around with my daughter in our neighborhood, and all very small streets, and there'd be a dog on one side of a fence, and maybe he was acting a little seemingly like it wanted to attack us or something. And I would start talking to the dog. And next thing you know, the dog is wagging its tail, and I'd put my hand in through the gate, which would at first frighten her. And then I used to love to say to my daughter, "You see, this dog speaks English. This dog can understand what I'm saying to it, and yet it's not using the actual words."
Right, right. Well, it's an analog language, and we have an analog language too. That's what we're saying, right?
Yes, yes.
Great, great. Somebody says here, it says, the body has wisdom that the brain hasn't often caught up with yet. I absolutely agree with that, and that's what I call it, the wisdom of the body. That it has the ability to hold, as Charlie says, it has memories. It also is the, you know, when people become creative, it's about connecting to the unconscious. Well, that's below the neck, you know, that when I start to connect to this larger, this, I take this little bit of thing called consciousness, awareness, this small thing, the cognitive mind, and I relax it down to become part of this whole other part of Judy, then I'm really available to life. I'm all here. As Thich Nhat Hanh would say, I'm present, I'm here, and I'm at home, I'm embodied. I can feel my feet on the ground.
Yes.
And from that place, there's an infinite amount of wisdom that resides there because it's relational. It's the wisdom that gets ignited when the cognitive mind really meets the heart, when somebody finally comes home to themselves and go, "Oh my God, I'm home again. Where have I been?" Yeah. That's the wisdom that gets ignited in that moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's, I was just going to say, I call it coming back home. A lot of people call it coming back home, but I really feel like when I've been traveling, particularly if I've been working and I've gone to 3 or 4 locations and I've been staying in hotels and so forth and so on, and I come back to the house that I live in, simply looking around and recognizing everything and feeling comfortable here, I'm back home again.
That's right.
And it's lovely to be there.
And you can do that anywhere in the world that you're at. You can be home.
Yes.
That's the point. So, you know, the somatic syntax, I'm going to get back to that a little bit, is kind of based or supported by this idea of self-organization theory. So if I were to take that present state of Charlie, let's say, going, you know, I don't feel quite as comfortable or confident when I'm talking to people that are not, I don't have confidence in. And so, but then I have this other state over here that I call being fully present and aware, connected there. And I could go, if we looked at those kind of as basins, if I took that state and go in that basin, what else is there? You know, what else is there from a neurolinguistic point of view? We would go, what are the neurolinguistic operators that are there? What images, what sounds, what feelings about feelings, which are emotions, what sensations, I would go, those are held also in a kind of constellation. And that constellation internally, this is a way to talk about it. I'm not talking about truth or anything here, but it's a description that that constellation will also support and hold what comes out of it. It's the inner game in that moment and how is it expressed through the outer game, right? And that's what's coming, you know, through my body. And the more time I spend there, the more time I go into that part of the landscape of Judy and get caught in there and get caught in there again, and I spend time and trying to understand it and understand it, I keep adding quite often more and more pieces to that, and it deepens it and broadens it. But what I'm trying to do is to relax it and destabilize it so it can soften. And another part of the landscape, which would be Charlie being fully present and, you know, is developing richer and deeper. Because it also will have its operators or its neuro-linguistic operators that support that particular part of the landscape. So there are times when I'm walking through life and I'm having, you know, everything's fine. And then something happens and I find, you know, a person says it's like falling down a tunnel, you know, like falling down Alice in Wonderland, going down the rabbit hole. And you go, I wasn't anticipating and I don't even know where in my landscape it was, but boom, there I am. And I feel like crap. Somatic syntax is a great way to kind of start to soften that out without having to go through a lot of cognitive function. If I have a belief, which is also below the neck, I might say, I don't get up every morning and go, I wonder what I'm gonna believe today. No, I don't do, maybe some of you guys do, but I don't. So I don't know they're there until that, till they get, you know, either you meet somebody like Charlie and I go, oh, I love you so much, you're just like my brother, or you meet somebody who repels you, then you know you gotta believe, right? But I can also go, well, they are something of the heart. So how are they expressed also somatically is another beautiful place to play around with. Yeah.
You know, and one of the ways that I think about it is when I get centered and I feel like I can literally feel my weight drop down into my body. The definition of who is Charlie or what is Charlie expands out to things like my relationship with Judy, my relationship with Matthew, who I've been getting to know for the last couple of weeks, my daughter,
I might say,
my daughter, my new puppy, and I realize that these are all resources for me that when I'm feeling upset, I seem to lose the relationship or connection to all of those resources.
I mean, I think that's the way I would perceive it as well, because it's a question of where I'm putting my attention. And so if my attention gets stuck inside, then I lose connection to the outside. It's a question of attention, right?
And that's where so much is happening.
And that's where it's all happening. That's why I say, as my dad used to say, life is a ticket to the greatest show on earth. Don't miss the show. Use your tickets. Because there's just one problem. Nobody gets out alive. So damn well enjoy it. You know, this is it.
Yes.
This is it.
Yes. You know, yes. I'm reminded, I'm losing his name right now, but there was a great British race car driver, and someone asked him, what the hell is it like when you go around the sharp turn at 150 miles an hour? And he said, well, it's interesting that you ask. He said, everything slows down, and I can tell you, I can recall all of the cracks in the pavement, and my entire awareness is like, it lets me know that I've got all the time I need to make that turn.
Yeah. My guess is that person has extended themselves right into the wheels of that car and they're feeling every bump along the way. So, you know, you were talking about that sense of what I lose when I, you know, when my body kind of gets caught in one of those records, you know, in one of those grooves, which is not so useful for me. And I keep repeatedly finding myself there. That is, I think it's really beautiful to be able to have a choice, like for you to be able to just go like this, you know, and that to shift for you, or to have some sense of shifting. Let me give you an example with my 14-year-old nephew recently. I was asked for mainland China to do a series of films that they want to use pieces of for practitioner in China. And, you know, it's locked down, we're having COVID, you know, you can't like get together in groups. And so I happen to find people who are willing to take the risk, you know, and sorry about that. Take the risk. So my 14-year-old nephew says, I'll do it, Aunt Judy, I'll do it. And I said, well, would you do like Dreamer Realist Critic, which is an NLP thing about where I have a dream and then I make a plan and then I ask hard questions, right? So I go, yeah, so what's your dream? And he goes, well, I want to do this. I want to do this really seriously hard skateboard trick. It's really hard. Okay, God, what, do you have a plan? Yeah, I have a plan. Da, da, da. I'm going to break it down. I'm going to do this little piece first. Then I'm going to do this little piece. First you do an ollie and then you do this other thing. Great. So now what's the problem? Well, you know, my parents probably won't want me to do it. B, I have to spend my own money. You know, I mean, he was like a master at it. And then when he got all done, he was really going, wow, I feel really good about that. I said, is there a place somewhere where you feel like you would like to have more creativity or something? He said, yes. When I'm being interviewed, because he's a real smarty pants kid, he's a really smart kid. He said, when I'm being interviewed, he goes, things are moving so fast in my mind that I get flustered and I can't do it. I can't think of anything. You know, I sort of, everything goes away in my mind. So I go, okay, so is there a place where that doesn't happen and you're still under pressure? You're still, you know, baseball. He goes, when we have to try out for like these high level baseball, you know, things, he said, you have to show up and you have to do it one at a time and you're getting judged on it. And there's all kinds of people, you know, looking at you and staring at you. And I said, so Casey, his name is Casey. So I said, Casey, well, what do you do there? He said, I just go like that. And it just goes away. I just go like that and I move on. So I said, okay, let's take that. Let's just take that and go to this context where you're being interviewed at school and your mind is racing so fast. And just do that movement. And he goes, oh my God, Aunt Judy, I can't believe it. I mean, it was that simple. This is a 14-year-old kid. He knows nothing about NLP. He knows nothing about somatic syntax, but he got it because he was willing to try it, you know?
Well, that's a big thing in and of itself, huh? Is being willing to try something new.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I think
as George Bernard Shaw said, if you can't change your mind, you can't change anything at all. So there you go.
Yes. Yes. Well, that can be a big thing for people is I didn't get it to work and I didn't get it to work and I didn't get it to work. Well, how about trying this? Oh, no, thanks. You know, and therefore they stay stuck in their stuckness, as I would call it.
Yeah. It happens. So, people are people.
I'm wondering, Matthew, are there any statements or questions from anybody that maybe we want to pay a little attention to?
I see one here. I'm curious if physical ailments such as chronic illness is a message or a signal from the body that something isn't being attended to. I would say it could be. It's certainly a signal. I mean, pain is a signal. Yeah, if I have a pain, it's something. It's trying to get my awareness. It's my body saying, hey, look at me. It's like a little kid in there. Hey. And sometimes it has to get louder and louder for me to pay attention. So I think at least it is a message for sure. And sometimes, absolutely, I'm not paying attention to something in myself. I'm taking care of myself maybe in some way, absolutely.
And someone wrote in and said, because I'm just seeing the questions and statements now, someone wrote in and said Jackie Stewart was the race car driver I was talking about. And
Nice. Well, I just remember also talking about, you know, this sense about at the level of identity, you know, who am I? I mean, these are concepts upon concepts upon concepts upon concepts, whereas the body is just going, who am I becoming? It's just a living system, a beautiful living system interacting with a larger living system called, you know, the white Tara Buddha or the Pachamama. This is our home. This is where we live. This is where we connect to the world. This is where we potentially correct. Our body gets that. This does not necessarily get that.
Yeah. So beautiful, beautiful that you said, rather than who am I, the body is saying, who am I becoming?
Yeah, the body is just becoming. It's a living system interacting with other living systems.
Yes.
I can have a conversation about that. That's a conversation about something else.
Yes.
But this organism is an organism, that is a living system in interacting with the other living systems,
Particularly if I'm feeling it all stuck, I think it's, for me, just hearing it from you now, who am I becoming opens me up to a lot of possibility. Who I am sometimes is like this person that's not good enough. Who am I becoming? A person that's more and more competent as life goes on.
Well, here's a way that I like to think about it, and you can think about this with somatic syntax as well, is to go, look, I know who I am in a kind of rigorous sort of way through relationship. I know I'm a mom because I have a kid. If I didn't have the kid, I wouldn't necessarily have released that potential called mom. I'm a grandma because I have grandkids. I'm a colleague because I have you, I have Matthew, I have, you know, people like Robert Boots. Those are colleagues. So that's a role identity. That's not my essence identity. Those are ways I know myself in the world through relationship with the world. And if I peel those onions, I peel all those relationships away, I'm just essence. I'm just me, Judy, if it has to have a name. This particular unique, as you all are out there, everybody out there, just a beautiful, unique essence, just like a brand new baby being born. It doesn't even have a name yet. You go, wow, that's a special essence there. And one of a kind, never going to be another one. You take your breath away to look at yourself in the mirror because it's a piece of art that is never going to be replicated. You should take good care of yourself because you're a piece of art that's never going to be replicated.
And you know, I'm more and more feeling or believing that this somatic intelligence we have, for instance, talking about myself, doesn't even really know who Charlie is.
He doesn't even care.
There you go. Doesn't even care who Charlie is. But wow, I say about our somatic self, it's working 24/7. It gets no paid holidays and often not much in the way of appreciation. And
I agree with that. And that's the importance of taking care of the, you know, the whole system. So somebody says lots of stuck in trauma responses. So from a somatic point of view, and I could go, what captures it physiologically or somatically, if I take it as Charlie did, and I exaggerate it. So it's like a movement in a dance. It's a part of your life dance. So it's a movement in there, right? Then there may be something I want. But then I could ask another question to go, this came from somewhere for Charlie, or this traumatic response you make, let's say it's a phobia. There was an event. There was a situation, say, where it was, you know, you're 7 years old and you're at your birthday party and there's a lot of noise and there's a lot of excitement and a lot of things are going on. And then somebody throws a pretend snake and pops a balloon at the same time. And it's like the perfect wave of the perfect timing, the perfect stimulus, the perfect intensity. And it's what it is a statement of is that the body can learn in one trial learning. That's what it's a statement that we're really good learners, right? But then we get kind of a molecule that all that stuff gets stuck together. That kind of a molecule of the sound and the sight and the feeling and the everything that was going on, it becomes kind of all like a molecule that is accessible from any point. If I hear a sound, it can get me there. If I see a snake, it can get me there. If I see a snake in a book, it can get me there. If somebody says, hey, there's a snake, it can get me there. If I hear a balloon, it might get me there, right? So then I might start to, and I think this is where it really connects to your work, Charlie, is that I can start to separate. Let me get the images where they belong. Let me get the sounds where they belong. Let me start to pull this molecule apart. And even sometimes use my body to do that. Sometimes it begins to open a lot of space around that trauma or that, phobia, and starts to soften.
Yeah, you know, and I'll be doing a talk in a couple of days, and Judy will be on that talk. It'll be the two of us again. And I'll be working with someone and showing a very interesting protocol for how we can really lessen the sense of trauma in the body. So just to mention that, and maybe some people.
I feel like that's an overlap. So I was just thinking of, you know, this idea of, you know, I've been a dancer or danced for, never been a dancer, but I've danced for a long time. Let me say that. And that there's this whole pathway of the hero's journey through the body. And if I think about that, the body is really taking the journey. That's who's really on the hero's journey, right? Is this organism, yep. Not just this cognition about goals that I want to achieve and all that. That's a small part of life. It's a great part of life, but it's a small part of life. And that, you know, here we are in this time where, you know, you're flowing through life. Everything is great. You know, the wave is building, as we say, you know, the water's always moving and is flowing. It's great. And then it's becoming a wave and getting defined. And this is a sense of this is who I am. And then the wave gets to the top and it starts to get very unstable. And all of a sudden, I have to let go of these old ways. I have to release myself from these old ways of being. And that's also in my body. If I'm stuck, I move. If I'm stuck,
yeah.
It's that simple. So that I can go into that deeper place and go, what's the new approximation of becoming, right? Who am I becoming?
Yes. You move.
Sorry.
You move quite often. We all do. You move without any clear sense of exactly where you're going. You're just moving.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I think that's a great beginning to just trust that there is a knowingness in this unit. And what helps the intelligence to come out is simply moving. And our entire body, even if I'm sitting here as still as I can possibly sit, there's movement in the body all the time.
That's your personal dance. When you can stand very, very quietly and bring your awareness inside and feel those small corrective movements that the body is making in relationship to gravity, I call that your personal dance. And that's a beautiful place to go when you want to come back home. And it's also a beautiful neuro-linguistic metaphor, because everybody has that. And it's a great metaphor because life will try to pull us away from that balance or that center, but we always come back. Gravity pulls us away and then we always come back. Gravity pulls us away and we always come back. So that's life, you know? Life is out to get you, as Steve Gilligan would say. You go, bring it on. Bring it on.
Yes.
Just let it flow through you. Don't let it get stuck in there.
Yes.
Super.
There's a question at the top from Cam saying, what if bringing an awareness to your body triggers disassociation? If you're looking at the constellation and mining its wisdom, what if bringing awareness to that triggers dissociation, triggers some...
So a person's very associated and they're very functional and that's all fine. And then they bring awareness to their body or their somatic world and it triggers a disassociation?
That's the question.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure that I've ever heard that. And I've always heard the opposite, which is that it creates an association, that the reasons of the reasons and the reasons of the heart are connected. Now, this is just a guess because I don't know, and Charlie may have better information. My guess is that there's a traumatic experience of some kind.
Yeah, my way of thinking about that is that there's this something that I've been trying to ignore because it was like really frightening. And then as I start to open up, it brings that thing that I've been attempting to ignore into my consciousness. And, you know, might not be simple and easy, but that's where we keep breathing, to breathe deeper and deeper and deeper and deeper, and see if you can notice that instead of trying to keep it away from yourself and add it into the much, much bigger space that's you.
And, you know, if that's a fear for somebody, if that's a fear for somebody, or if that's a question for somebody, or as a practitioner, I teach neurolinguistics. My background is comparative religion and anthropology. That's what my degrees are in. So, you know, neurolinguistic came as something else, and it fit perfectly for me because it's about how any of us create maps of the world. And that there is, for me, a very underlying deep wisdom in the organization of this unit of mind called the body, which all together produces something we call mind. And then we have a brain, and the brain, you know, this unit produces thought. This a neurolinguistic function or a neurological function that creates thought. So, I would say that if that's a fear or a concern or a person has had that experience, that I would approach it with a lot of curiosity and also with a lot of softness and a lot of interaction, or notice somatically if there's something somatically that could make a difference. Sometimes can I go there and continue to make a certain movement which keeps me associated? Does that help? That might be a place to think about. That I'd be very curious and very careful with that person, just out of respect, you know, just out of respect.
Well, you know, Judy, one thing I've seen you do many, many times when we've been working together is someone has a problematic thing that's happened and they can't seem to let go of, and then you've done something and you've talked about it today. What if you took this and just went, whoo, took this and went, whoo, took this and went, whoo, and after a while, everything, the initial difficult time seems a lot smaller and a lot more manageable.
Well, I mean, there's an underlying assumption that I'm asking a person to take some control over it themselves.
Okay, cool. Yes. So
I'm asking. And there are times when a person said, I just can't do it. And I go, can I hold it for you? Can I hold this for you? Do you trust me to hold it in? And I promise to God, I'll give it back. I won't lose it. I won't hide it. I'll just hold this for you so that you can take a big, deep breath and go, this is life maybe without this, for just a minute, just to go, is this really what you want?
Yeah.
Yeah. Because
fantastic. Fantastic.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool.
So I think we're about at the end of our time. And I'm fairly certain.
Not me. I've got another about 50 years.
So Matthew will say something, I'm sure. But I just want to say, as I always have this same feeling when Judy and I work together or spend time together, I want to say thank you to Judy. I'm always learning something in having the conversation with you. And there's a lot of information that you've given, and people, I believe, can go back to this class and play it how many ever times they'd like to. But thanks for the information. Thanks for the overall feeling and love that you always bring to the space, Judith.
So I love this when it says the body learns through polarity. I'd say, no, the body learns through difference. It's not the same.
Yes. Okay.
That's the difference that makes a difference.
Yes.
All right, you guys. Matthew, thank you. Charlie, thank you, love.
Thank you so much. It's
my pleasure.
And we'll see some of you in 2 days' time.
Yes, for Charlie's one as well. And Judy, you get to tease Charlie and prod him in his piece. Thank you so much for coming on today. You've been a trainer and co-developer, a designer of programs in the field of neurolinguistics since 1975. And I've learned so much and brought so much into my clinical practice as an osteopath from your work. That score model that you shared with me.
We can dance the score.
Yeah, absolutely. To dance out the problems that the story that their bones tell has been an extraordinary tool for me.
And great. Thank
that
you.
Sense of safety you create and blessing and kindness, loving kindness you bring.
Yes, yes.
Thank you, guys. Yeah. I feel blessed right now with that. Thank you.
Okay, I guess that's it. Bye bye.
Love you guys. Thank you.
Love, love, love.
Thank you.
Bye bye.
Bye.
I have some important links to read out too, but thank you, Judith. Thank you, Charlie. That's great. Look forward to seeing you in 2 days' time.
Okay. Since Matthew, you can still hear me, huh?
I can, yes.
So when I do my talk, we had talked about this and then we went in totally other directions. Will I just, because like I'm not even seeing any of the people, I'm just seeing the chats. Am I going to pick someone on my own to work with, or will you help out with that?
I'll certainly help out with that. There's people we can bring on the panel so that more than just the three in the gallery view you can see now, we can bring on 20 odd people. And pick from them, so you'll get the chance to see a smaller selection of people rather than the 160 odd we have.
Okay, so you'll choose a panel.
We'll work it out together.
Okay, cool. Okay, see you in a couple of days.
Look forward to it. Thank you.
Thank you, my friend.
Join the full library. Go to the embodimentconference.org upgrade. Thank you for showing up for this talk. Our sponsor is Dylan Newcomb, and that's the wrap, I think.